All right, folks, we've got a great episode this week in store for the Class Reflection Podcast. This week, we're focusing on Chapter 8. So, as a reminder, this podcast is a chance for me to share other questions asked by students in their class reflections, assignments, and to provide answers and further discussion on these points. So, with that in mind, let's get to it right away with our first question. One student asks, I'm having some difficulties understanding what is a systematic new product development. So, all a systematic new product development means is that a company has set procedures, software, systems, or protocols for how to proceed and progress through the new product development process. With systematic new product development, everything isn't just done in a very random fashion. It's very intentional. There are structures, there are protocols in place. Think about the video that we watched in class about Starbucks's Idea Lab, the center where they were able to turn ideas into actual creations, into actual market offerings in a very short amount of time. They're able to do that because they have a systematic new product development process. They have a series of meetings, softwares, an ability to track progress of all of these new ideas as they're rolled out into the market, as they're rolled out into test stores, collecting feedback about success or failures and integrating that with the development process. All of that is a great example of systematic new product development. Our next question asks, I don't quite understand the relationship between customer-centered, team-based, and systematic new product development. What I don't understand is if they're mutually exclusive or if they can all be employed at the same time. All right, that's a good question. So these should all be employed at the same time. They are not mutually exclusive. So now that you mention this, it does remind me that the way the book and the chapter is written comes across somewhat like they are mutually exclusive, but they aren't. The book kind of partitions them apart and discusses customer-centered new product development and team-based new product development and systematic new product development. But however, any really great effective new product development process should be all of that. It should be customer-centered, it should be team-based, and it should be systematic. Now, it could be possible that some efforts within a company are customer-centered and team-based, but they're not systematic. And so what that would mean is that they are oriented towards the customer, learning what the customer needs are, how they appraise the new concepts they're presented with. And they can also be team-based, but they might lack that systematic process in that they might not have the systems in place to recreate the magic time and time again. So all three of those different elements are not mutually exclusive. But any really great, efficient, effective innovation process within a company is going to incorporate all three. The next question was mainly a synthesis of a bunch of questions people asked. Really curious about the timing part of commercialization. So remember, commercialization is the final step in the new product development process. And one of the key questions with commercialization is knowing when is going to be the right moment to commercialize a new product. Now, the example I gave in class was about video game systems, mainly video game consoles like the PlayStation and the Xbox and the different systems offered by Nintendo. People had just were asking questions about whether it was actually true that most of these systems come out in a certain time of year and whether or not that would be a good strategy if you have a lot of competition always coming out at the same exact time every year. So I looked it up with the PlayStation. The last four models of the PlayStation, including the new one coming out of the PlayStation 5, were all released in November. So the PlayStation 2 came out November 8th, 2000. PlayStation 3 came out November 11th, 2006. PS4, November 15th, 2013. And the PS5 will come out November 12th, 2020, this year. So they are targeting that November release date to be hot and fresh on people's minds when they're making their Christmas list, when kids are planning. Xbox was very similar. The original Xbox came out November 15th, 2001. The Xbox 360, November 25th, 2005. The Xbox One, November 22nd, 2013. And later this year, the Xbox Series X will be released November 10th, 2020. So they're all coming out. Historically, these systems have all came out in November. It seems that only the year 2000, actually, the last two releases both consisted of models coming out at the exact same time. The PS4 came out November 15th, 2013. The Xbox One came out, looks like 7 days later on November 22nd, 2013. You see a little bit of a different pattern when looking at Nintendo's models. So the last four for Nintendo, looking back to the Nintendo 64 coming out in September of 1996, the GameCube coming out in November of 2001, the Wii coming out around November to December 2006, and the Switch coming out March of 2017. So again, I'm not too knowledgeable about this area, so I might not have the best insights. One thing is that you can kind of see that the PlayStation and Xbox are being released in very close succession of one another, at least the last two models. My sense is that they are competing over a more similar set of customers than the Nintendo. You see Nintendo coming out generally a little earlier in the year, and the very fact that the Switch came out in March suggests that it might not be appealing to the same kind of markets that might be buying the PlayStation and Xbox. But at least for those for Sony and for Microsoft, they are systematically trying to hit the November release date as what they think would be the ideal time to release a system in the North American market. Probably, I'm guessing at this point, they have similar dates internationally, but really trying to capitalize as much as they can on the holiday buying market. So a historical retrospective at release dates suggests that this is pretty well thought out and seems to be quite consistent over the past 20 years. All right, and for our final question for this week, the question asks, is there a set of rules or standards when it comes to social responsibility when developing or marketing products? So I'll just set this apart here. I think in this question, we're talking about social responsibility, like promoting the greater societal or environmental welfare, as opposed to more legal ramifications, such as violating patents or infringing on regulatory standards like marketing cigarettes to children. So this is a good question. I haven't thought about it too much. A first few thoughts would be that if you're trying to generate ideas about new products to offer and you're using the crowdsourcing approach where you're collecting a lot of ideas and input from a wide variety and a wide body of consumers, then that will likely give you clues about what kind of products or services that customers want and what kind of products and services will ultimately benefit them long term. So when you do crowdsourcing, you're very not really likely to get ideas offered by people that would be against their own welfare. That's my sense. Second is that if you're engaging in the idea screening process using that RWW strategy, right? R is for real, the first W is for when, the second W is for worth doing. If you're screening ideas using that framework, that will also let you know whether certain ideas or new products might not be sustainable long term. You can't really win with a product idea if the resources that you need to make or manufacture it are going to be scarce in a few years. It's not sustainable. It's not going to be worth doing, mainly for your company's own values, if it's ultimately going to harm your consumers. So those are a few early clues that I can think about. What might the asker of this question might be getting towards is something like the American Marketing Association, the AMA. They have a what they call a code of conduct and a statement of ethics. So it's a series of not legally binding guidelines, but it is a framework to promote the highest standard of professional ethical norms and values for its members. So for marketing practitioners, for academics like me, and also for students who are involved. Now, what the AMA says in terms of three broad ethical norms are first, to do no harm. And this means consciously avoiding harmful actions or omissions by embodying high ethical standards and adhering to all applicable laws and regulations and the choices we make. The second is to foster trust in the marketing system. This means striving for good faith and fair dealing, so as to contribute towards the efficacy of the exchange process, as well as avoiding deception in product design, pricing, communication, and delivery of distribution. And the third is to embrace ethical values. This means building relationships and enhancing consumer confidence in the integrity of marketing by affirming these core values: honesty, responsibility, fairness, respect, transparency, and citizenship. So if you're engaging in the innovation process, you're keeping these ethical values in mind, you're wanting to foster trust in the marketing system by being very transparent, by being responsible, then I think those are all actions that will ultimately contribute to social responsibility in the marketing process long term. So that's a solid 10 minutes of questions and answers. Thanks to everyone who contributed a response to the class reflections of this week. Hopefully, this will be of value to a lot of you as you prepare for exam two and continue your reading. I'll have another installment of this next week, looking at product and brand in chapter 7. So I look forward to reading your questions and your comments in the class reflections. I'll likely be doing these on Sunday afternoon, so continue to get these in on time each week, and we'll have a great assortment of questions to encounter.